and Murray.
From the Town Care Tire Studio, it is, for the first time in over a month, if I have this correct, Gasper and Murray back together again here on 98.5 The Sports Hub in a frosty cold studio in an equally frosty cold building. You'll have to take my word for that. Kristen Sermon was just producing the hockey show with Ryan Johnston wearing her winter coat in the back room, and I'm about to put mine back on. But I'm not here to freak out about the equipment in the cold building like I did yesterday in Felger and Mass. Welcome back, Chris, my man.
Hey, good to see you.
You as well.
It's been a while since we've done this show together.
Yes, I know our schedules can often be erratic, but I don't think we've ever gone this long without doing the show together. I went to that terrible Patriots-Titans road game.
Yes,
you went out to
yes,
L.A.
Did. I did.
We got
Thanksgiving
our,
week.
We got our token yearly show off thanks to the high school football games that nobody listens to. I've missed you, my friend.
Yeah, it's been a while. We haven't done the show in a long time. Hopefully it's like riding a bike.
Yeah, hopefully. Because it's been lonely here, too, flailing by myself, dishing out the takes and all the nonsense. We'll be Patriots heavy today, if that's okay
it
with you.
It works for me, yeah. Say that, though, but you really, you would prefer to be by yourself.
No. It's believe me, it's so much easier here with you, and I like having you here, and it's just because, anyway, like, I, you know, you're probably my favorite person to work with.
Oh, that's so nice, Jim. Well, you're really in the holiday spirit.
Very much so, yes. I am feeling quite festive. We have to talk about the Celtics, of course, who seemingly turned things around with this current four-game winning streak. We'll do that in about an hour on the Sports Hub Celtics show. B-Rob is also producing the show as well. Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, who covers the Celtics, so he'll join us. But first, if you would indulge me, though, Chris, because there is I have to scratch an itch real quick.
Do it.
Something that happened last night. I've come to the conclusion that we somehow have to, as a society, put a stop to all the content. There's too much content. And it's not because it's too much good stuff. I know this is a false narrative, too much good stuff. And sometimes I will recommend shows to you, movies to you, and you're like, a lot of people, I know, I got to get to it. It's in my queue. Oh, I got to watch that. I've heard good things. It's not about too much good content. There's too much crap. There's too much crap, and you get tricked into watching crap. Time and again, this has happened to me, and last night was the last straw. The lady and I come back from dinner, and like most people on a Friday or Saturday night, you're now like full, you want to watch something, you go to Netflix, you scroll, seen it, heard that sucks, not going to watch it, and it's just the same stuff you've seen over and over again.
Yeah.
So you go over to Amazon and Amazon Prime, and it's a lot of the same stuff. Seen it, heard that sucks. Oh, what's this? Maybe I'll nope. Can't rent it because you have to buy it for $15. Typically, they'll put a new movie on there, one that I'm actually interested in, but I'm not going to pay for it because I'm cheap like that. But I will rent between $3 and $6. And we come across a documentary called Wasted Talent. And it's the story of Lilo Brancato, the kid that was in. Do you ever see The Bronx Tale?
Yes, yeah.
He was Calogio.
Yeah.
The kid in The Bronx Tale who was like the star of the movie outside
It's funny. We just saw a production of The Bronx Tale on stage in Los Angeles while I was out there. This is like fresh in my mind.
Calogio. You fancy pants. So you know who's.
Hey, see?
Yeah. So you know who he is against going up with Robert De Niro in that movie. And he was also in The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Well, it's the documentary of how this kid ended up becoming like he ruined his career. He becomes a drug addict.
Yeah.
And ended up in this crime where he gets accused of killing a cop. Now, the guy who he robs this place with this, you know, they're trying to, like, get heroin or whatever the hell it is. And this New York cop ends up getting killed. And the kid who plays Calogio ultimately gets acquitted in this because he wasn't the one that pulled the trigger. But this documentary, you have to figure. The reason I know this story now, Chris, is because I ended up having to look it up on the internet. Because the documentary is crap. It was produced by a guy immediately. It starts with the filmmaker who looks like every stereotypical New York Goomba with a bad tan and a tight shirt, and he's all jacked up, and he's talking about how he came to make this movie, and immediately it was like, oh, no. Oh, I've been duped again. Like, how did this happen? But no, I'm going to ride this out, but there's no flow to the story. You get no understanding as to what happened at the shooting. The story of how this kid ruined his career and his life. We ended up fast forwarding through most of the movie, and I want my $4 back. And I can't tell you, Chris, how many times this keeps happening to me. Maybe I should do my due diligence and look up on the internet to read reviews before I read something, but I'm not going to do that. Like, I should be able to trust that I'm going to get good content. And I know you're not going to get it right 100% of the time, but there's just too much. And the catch-22 of all the good things that the internet has given us and the phones that you hold in your hand are essentially, you know, recording devices, both video and audio, and anyone can make content. is that people lack too much self-awareness. There's too much crap. We've been oversaturated with crap, and I've had it. That was the last straw last night. I'm tired of wasting, at the risk of sounding like a complete cheap a-hole, I'm tired of it. The $5 to $4, I want it back.
Oh, yeah, no.
So many times
it
I rent something. It does, and it's like, this was terrible. And I could have actually used my time watching something else or reading a book, but I'm continuously getting duped by bad books, too. I've just had it. That's all. I had to scratch that itch. There's too much. Just practice self-awareness, people. That's all we can do as a society. I think it's maybe the worst trait in human beings is that when people don't practice self-awareness, and now it's happened too much with those that put out content like this and think, oh, this is great because I can do it. I know that I can put it up on iTunes and people can listen to my podcast or now watch this bad documentary on Netflix or Amazon. And because it's up, it means it's good. It's not. Just because you could do it doesn't mean that you should. That's all. So, don't watch the movie Wasted Talent. Terrible, terrible. Just read about that story. There's actually a great article I found this morning on The Ringer about this Lilo Brancato who played Cologio in The Bronx Tale. Read that instead. It's much more worth
it. You and the lady should have clicked on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
I'm not watching that either.
It's pretty good.
No. See, I don't. I'm not watching like woke stand-up specials or anything like that. Just an old curmudgeon. This Pats game tomorrow in Miami. I said yesterday on Felger and Maz, this game I find actually, I think we're going to find out more about the Pats in this game tomorrow than we will in a couple of weeks against the Steelers. Because the Steelers, for all their foolishness over the last couple of weeks and how poorly coached they are, and that they've fallen back here, too, because I was completely convinced after they pulled that one out of their caboose a couple of weeks ago when they won in Jacksonville, where they're down 16-0 in that game. It's like, oh, I've seen this before. This cockroach Steelers team that won't go away. This team's actually going to the Super Bowl this year. And they were my pick in the beginning of the year anyway, them and the Saints. They've come back down to earth, poorly coached. But in terms of talent, at least they match up with the Pats year in, year out. They're one of the iron of the AFC, like the Patriots. So if they were to lose there, like, that would suck, but it's understandable. I mean, they almost did last year, and they got the benefit of the call against Jesse James.
Jesse James, yes.
The incomplete pass, Pats win, and it was one of their signature wins of the year. But if they were to happen to lose that game in a couple of weeks, I'm not going to be that freaked out about it, because if they met them in the playoffs again, considering their success against that team throughout the Brady Belichick era, like, I would think that they would beat them the second time around if they lost. Tomorrow, if they lose in Miami, and I know what the track record is there, and they're 1-4 in their last five down there, that's inexcusable. That will prove to me this team really is kind of a fraud, like I've thought for stretches in this season, like 2009 and 2013, and that they're not that good, because that Miami team, Chris, is wretched. That's a bad
operation. Yeah, I agree. I agree with you on Miami. I mean, I think Miami's a fraud team, and I said that when they were 3-0, and you look at them now, no Xavier Howard, who's their best player. Their passing attack is very bad. It's 28th in the league. They basically, in a game against Indy that they lost 2 weeks ago, were essentially afraid to let Tannehill throw late in the fourth quarter. Like, they didn't want to do it, and they ended up losing the game that way. They beat the Bills last week. Tannehill throws for 3 touchdowns, but he only throws for 137 yards. I don't think this Miami team is very good. The only thing that scares me about this game, Jim, is the locale. You know, I feel like Hard Rock Stadium, which, by the way, is one of my least favorite stadiums in the NFL. And I haven't been down there since the renovations, but I don't care. The whole thing sucks. Traffic, parking lot, can't find the media entrance. There's stupid orange carpet of faux celebrities who own like a piece of the team, like Serena Williams and what's the other guy? Mark Anthony and all these.
The Cheeseburger in Paradise A-hole has a part of it too, doesn't he?
Yes, it's the worst. It's just the environment. It's like... When the, you know, it's a lot, they try and be sort of like the Los Angeles Lakers, except for they've never won anything really, you know, except for the 70s. And it's just the whole thing is it's trying to be something it's not. And it's just so aggravating down there. But the other part of it is it's sort of like the Bermuda Triangle for Brady and Belichick and their excellence. So outside of location, I don't see any reason why this game should be a challenge, you know, for the Patriots. And if they lose this one, I'm in agreement with you. Look, they know what their issues have been down there. But this is a weak Dolphins team that they're facing. And if they don't have the mental fortitude to pull out a victory in South Florida, then I would have some real concerns about this team if it has to go on the road in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's completely inexcusable. Their offensive line's banged up. Tannehill's playing hurt. I think the coach is one of these guys that tries to show off how smart he is.
Adam Gase. Yeah, I actually think Gase is a decent coach.
He's good with quarterbacks. Like, he's one of these quarterback whisperer types. And hell, he even got something out of Jay Cutler when he essentially you know, came out of retirement last year and beat the Pats on that Monday night game around this time last year. But there's just there's sometimes when I watch this guy and how he coaches, and case in point, last week, the Dolphins-Bills game was the 1 o'clock game because the Pats were on late, and at the end of that game, the Dolphins did everything in their power, Chris, to give that game away.
For those not a good situational football team.
For those that weren't watching, so one of the last possession that the Dolphins had, just essentially trying to eat clock and, you know, get out of there and pull off a win, on like a 3rd and 6, Gase calls a wildcat play? A wildcat play that gets blown up in the backfield, rightfully so, because no one should be running those stupid plays, especially when you don't have the personnel.
But to me, that says more. That says more about the quarterback, the alleged franchise quarterback, and Tannehill, than it does the coach. You know, he doesn't trust him. He doesn't want to put the game in his hands. They want to keep the game out of his hands.
Either way, it's institutionalized stupidity that you have with that franchise right now.
They're an undisciplined team, too.
And so the Bills blow it up. They get another chance, and they almost pull off a win. If Charles Clay comes back, he's a little too deep in the end zone, and Josh Allen throws a bomb into the end zone, and he misses it by a yard or two. The Bills get a walk-off win there that they really didn't deserve. But the Dolphins did everything in their power to give it back. They've been on a few times this year. And having watched them, there is, like, they suck year in, year out, and they're just like, you know, they're at team.
Yeah.
I think they are not 6-6. Like, they're a bad 500 team. They essentially stole one in the week one in that 7-hour game against the Tennessee Titans.
Yes.
Because of the weather. This one last week, they likely should have lost. Like, they're just not a good football team.
The Patriots are the better team. Now, look, it's the NFL. You know, I know it's cliche, but it's true. Any given Sunday, the AFC teams, when they have the Patriots at home, they're going to give them their best shot, and the Patriots have a tendency to let these teams hang around, and there normally is one, like, scratch-your-head AFC East loss every year. So, you know, if it happened on Sunday, would it be the most shocking thing in the world? No. But it would still be disappointing, because I think, you know, that's one of the things that's been a little challenging, I think, this year with the Patriots. It's just the general consistency of performance. I think this is an opportunity. This is the time of year they always talk about, Jim, that they have to be peaking, playing their best football. I thought they played a pretty complete game last week against Minnesota. So don't take a step back against a team that is not as good as you. You know, don't do that. Continue to build the momentum as you get past Miami, go into Pittsburgh. And then really the last two games of the year at home, you know, you have Buffalo and the Jets, and those are sort of layups, and you go into the playoffs at that point. I think this is a pivotal game for the Patriots to just sort of maintain the momentum here and sort of establish that identity as a team that just continues to find a way to win and that's going to play its best as it gets into the playoffs.
No excuses. They should kill this team tomorrow. And last week was eye-opening to me because I hadn't believed in this team much, but it was a fundamentally sound game, especially defensively.
Great game defensively.
Defenses looked better the last few weeks. So I believe that they are going to go down there and beat this team like 27-10. To me, that would feel like a blowout, even if it, you know, was a bit of a struggle early. But they should kill this Dolphins team tomorrow. If they don't, they're a fraud. Your guys' thoughts on this game, and why do you think the Patriots continue to struggle down there, even when they're playing a mediocre Dolphins team? 617-779-0985. I'll get your thoughts on that, Chris, and we'll take your calls next. Casper Murray back together again here, guys, on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You know, looking at the Dolphins, this is a lot different team than we saw 8 weeks ago. You know, gave us a lot of problems down there last year with their scheme, their players, and, you know, the way they played. I'm sure we'll get the same thing this time. Hopefully we'll be able to do a better job of it.
They play well at home. I think they use that climate as a benefit to them. Us going down there and playing good football is ultimately, that's the opponent, is the Dolphins and not the climate. And playing a good football game is definitely, you know, what this week's about for us. And we can't expect to go out there and play less than our best and win.
Excited to get down there in some warm weather. The climate's going to be definitely a change from what we've been practicing in the last couple weeks. I mean, we've been practicing in mid-30s, 40 degrees. So just got to go down there. We got to execute. We got to make plays. And we got to start fast from the get-go.
Yeah, it's a bad Dolphins team. They have no excuse to lose to them tomorrow. That's head coach Bill Belichick, followed by Tom Brady and tight end Rob Gronkowski. Brady and Gronk spoke yesterday heading into tomorrow's game. Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. But again, just looking at this Dolphins team is here. I don't care about the 6-6 record, and this game means something in terms of them trying to squeak into the playoffs. They stink. Their defense is banged up. As Chris, you mentioned in the first segment, Xavien Howard, who has 7 interceptions this year, was named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week. He's got a knee injury. He's not playing in this game. He had 2 picks in the Monday Nighter there last year. on Brady. Their offense is hampered by the head coach, Gase, who tries too hard to show how smart he is. They don't trust the quarterback because Tannehill's playing injured, and even if they put in Brock Osweiler, he's just a tall Tannehill. Like, it's like the same guy. They can't lose to this team tomorrow. But they continually go down there and lose to this bad team and bad quarterbacks. And they were flashing it on the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston on Felger and Maz this week. You see some of the names. My God. Throughout the Brady Belichick era, I mean, the likes of... AJ Feely, right?
Jay Fiedler. Yeah.
Like real bums. Joey Harrington at
there,
one
there
point.
Was, I remember I was down there in 09 when Chad Henne lit him up. He threw the ball like 52 or 53 times and lit him up, and they lost that game.
And granted, you know, in the early aughts, like even when the Patriots were at their best, that 2014, which I still think is their best team, like, you know, they had good defensive players, especially up front.
Jason Taylor was Zach bad. Thomas, those guys back in the day.
Patrick Surtain, like they had a good secondary too. Okay, so I kind of get it, but now, like, what? Why? Do you think it's the weather? Do they go out and party in South Beach the night before? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me that that place continually has been a house of horrors.
Yeah, there's some places where, you know, I'm intrigued by this with Brady because I always use this sort of comparison that, you know, Larry Bird used to not like shooting at Oracle Arena, you know, back in the day playing the Warriors. It was like he just didn't like the shooting background. And I wonder if there's something at that terrible stadium that sort of throws Brady off, you know, just spatially, that just makes him uncomfortable. Because he's had some of his worst performances there. Like, you know, you're mentioning, I think it was either 03 or 04. It might have been that 04 game where I think he made what to me is like the worst throw of his career. Remember that? He's falling down and he tries to throw it away. And, you know,
that was 03, I think.
And it's intercepted.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the worst throw that Brady's probably ever made was there. I was there in 06 when he got shut out by Nick Saban and Dom Capers. They got shut out down there. So I don't know what it is, but there's something there. I think a lot of it, honestly, had to do over the years with the pass rush because the Dolphins traditionally have been a team, whether it's, you know, Jason Taylor or Cam Wake, they have a really good pass rusher. They can generate a rush with four and drop seven, and that's usually the formula to get after Brady. You know, if you can bring the front four and put pressure on him and then drop seven and make some of those windows tighter, you can get it done. So I think for a long time it had to do with the matchup and the talent, but the last couple of years, I can't figure it out. I mean, last year, losing to Jay Cutler, I don't know. I mean, they just were terrible in that game. I mean, Brandon Cooks couldn't get any separation. You're letting Jay Cutler look like vintage Jay Cutler. It's just one of those things, you know? It doesn't make a lot of sense, but they obviously struggle down there. There's no question about it. It's their Waterloo, you know?
You know, you say they, but a lot of it is with Tom Brady. It starts with him. And even that game you mentioned last year that they lose to Jay Cutler, I mean, Brady played like ass in that. And okay, you maybe want to make the excuse, well, that was the Rob Gronkowski suspension game because he dove in the back of Tredavious White, the Buffalo Bills, so they don't have Gronk. No, Brady, if you remember, he's like, it was a chuck and duck game. Like, he's throwing up in double coverage to Brandon Cooks. And again, Xavier Howard ends up with two interceptions in that game. It was just a bad game by Brady against a bad Dolphins team. Inexcusable. And the other thing is, too, is that the AFC now feels more wide open. Like, for most of the season, at least the first 9 weeks or so, Chris, it's felt very top-heavy. It's felt like Kansas City, and especially in the NFC, it's been the Saints and the Rams. It just feels like over the last few weeks, everything's kind of come back down to earth. And it feels like, even though this is, comparatively speaking to other Patriots teams, a downish year for the Pats, well, they're still one of the top five or six best teams in the league, and if they're starting to look like how they're looking against the Minnesota Vikings last week, it's like, okay, well, maybe they can get back to the Super Bowl this year. And it just feels like if they were to go down there tomorrow and drop this game, it would just be so sobering. And that's why I think it's bigger than – I ultimately feel like you'll learn more tomorrow than you will against Pittsburgh in a couple of weeks.
So I agree with you. On the other hand, though, the more I think about it, I'm like, you know what? If they do lose it, and I would be disappointed because, like we've said, I mean, I really don't think this is a good Dolphins team. But if they did lose, would you just write it off and say, well, that's what happens in Miami? In other words,
that Dolphins team's that bad.
Okay.
Chris, I'm not.
But there's no way that you could just write it off and say, that's what happens in Miami. And then they go beat Pittsburgh and they go march into the AFC Championship game and they're back in the Super Bowl.
That happens, then yeah, we'll completely forget about it and we'll, you know.
But that's what I'm saying. You know, I agree with you in terms of the disappointment if they lose. And also, I think given their struggles on the road, it would be indicative of a larger issue. Now, look, they could end up going to a third straight Super Bowl and never have to play on the road, so it's not a problem. But the more I sort of think about it, I wouldn't be stunned if they lost this game and still ended up playing in the Super Bowl. I think that there's a way that you can sort of write off the loss because that's sort of just what happens in in Miami. So, you know, even if that's even if they are unable to rise to the occasion and win this game on the road against a bad Dolphins team, I'm not sure that as much as we'd be disappointed, I'm not sure that that condemns them when it comes to the postseason or not going to the Super Bowl.
I just think it would be an indictment on how they've played on the road all year. I wouldn't trust them because if it would hurt them in terms of the standing, it could.
Yes.
As it could work out the way that you're saying it is. But I just think that, you know, they need to run the table right now if they're realistically going to get the one seed. And I think that's what has to happen for them to get to Atlanta.
Yeah.
Ed and Whitman, you're first up here on Gaspar and Murray this morning. Hi, Ed.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
So you guys kind of suck because you pretty much just answered the question I was going to ask. Murray, first, just want to say you're totally right about the Netflix thing. Like, I don't want to watch Scream 4 or Friends. But I will say that
it all stinks. Everything I've come to the conclusion, Ed, too, on this just for a second. Outside of documentaries that they produce, everything that Netflix makes, their original content, all terrible. You know, the first season of Narcos, good. Each following season, a little less better.
Oh, thank you. The first season, yeah, good. Everything else is horrible. Same thing with Bloodline. Same thing.
What's the one?
Bloodline. I liked the first season. Everything after that was horrible.
Yeah. All right, what do you got in this game tomorrow? Go ahead.
Check out Wind River, though. It's a movie that's on there. It's a great movie.
All right.
So the only thing I was going to say was about going to Miami that I don't understand is usually it's a player, not a whole team, that has a problem going somewhere, like Tuca, except for last with Montreal, the last game. Or, you know, you brought up Bird, Gasper.
Yes.
So, like, and you guys probably just pretty much said it, but I don't get why, because there's so much turnover with the Patriots. Like, how a team can go down to this crap hole and usually a crap team and always do so poorly.
Well, I think a lot of it is the Patriots go as Brady goes, and Brady hasn't played well there. I mean, he has 19 career regular season AFC East losses. He has 9 career losses in Miami. So nearly half of those losses have been in Miami. So if you look at the way the team is, a lot of teams, not just the Patriots, go the way the quarterback goes, but particularly in the latter half of his career, the Patriots have been, I would say in a lot of cases, inordinately dependent upon Tom Brady. So if he goes down there and plays a poor game, then their odds of winning, particularly on the road, really decrease. So I think, you know, I know we say, you know, it's just normally it's more than, you know, I think he said normally it's just one player. But in the Patriots case, it is one player most of the time, and it's their most important player. And a lot of times I think they just haven't had the margin for error. And then there's some other times, and we touched on this too, for whatever reason, I think defensively, that's where I think if you want to talk climate, weather, fatigue, I think that's where it's come into play. Because there are times down there against lesser quarterbacks in the fourth quarter, and I think of that Henny game in 2009, where they're not making plays to get off the field that they should make to get off the field.
You see the hands on the hips,
yeah.
A lot of heavy breathing because
yeah.
of the steamy weather yep. down there. Still, though, there's games that stand out, you know, like blowout wins, the end of 2016, the Michael Floyd game where everyone loses their mind. Like, what a block. He's going to make a difference in the playoffs. Yeah. He didn't. Booze bag.
And then, he did make a difference for the Texans when that ball went off his hands. It got intercepted.
The other one I always remember, even though it was ultimately, you know, they go to the Super Bowl and lose, but that 2011 season when they opened there, do you remember the 99-yard reception from
Welker? Yeah, like, for like 510 yards.
Complete ass-kicking. That's how every game should look against that mediocre Dolphins team, year in, year out when they go down there.
But they had all off-season to prepare for that.
Yeah, still. I don't know what it is. Maybe they just party on South Beach the night before. I mean,
I think in Brady's younger days, maybe that was positive. But now, you think he's going out? You think he's trusting somebody else to make him a drink or food?
Oh, no. No, please. He probably doesn't even leave the hotel room. But still, there's something in the water there or in the air. I don't get it.
He's probably just scrolling through Netflix.
Yeah.
Finding better content than you because he's a better person,
you know,
all around, Jim.
I'll try this new season of Narcos. Oh, okay. This first episode was boring. So was the second. Third, well, that not much really happening here. Even though Michael Pena's a great actor, but you know, is anyone else? Who are these unrecognizable actors that are just so boring on screen every time? This fifth episode, just boring. Now I'm going to tap out. The show was great. Each successive season, not as good. And this last one, I'm not doing it. I tapped out just like I did with Stranger Things. First season, good. Second season, crap.
Second season was fine.
It really wasn't.
Third season, they're making a comeback.
Of course, you know, let's just keep putting out the same content over and over and over again. Because
hey, some of us have family members who work for Netflix, so go easy on the stock.
Marshall Hook is here. He's going to get you caught up in the Sports Hub headlines. Then we'll come back here, continue to take your calls and thoughts on the Patriots in Miami tomorrow. And, Chris, want to get your thoughts on my theory that Gronk Gronk, the character, like the Hulk, dead. We'll do that next.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gronk, the force, the monster, the Hall of Famer, the All-Pro. You're going to see it in flashes here and there, especially when he has rest, he's feeling well, maybe the divisional round, maybe the Super Bowl if they get there. Largely, he's going to be an above average, slightly above average tight end. And I think it would really behoove them to go out. They need to bring somebody in because I don't know how much longer he's going to last.
I feel like obviously I can be more effective for sure. I can grow in the pass game, definitely grow in the run game even more at times. And just whatever it is, just got to go out there and play my best football.
So that was Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal, echoing what I said earlier in the week on Felger and Maz, that Gronk, like Hulk, is dead. We're left with just another tight end, Robert James Gronkowski, followed by Gronk speaking yesterday. It is Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. And I was looking at some of the stats in terms of touchdown production this year, at that position this year, Chris, and the names that Gronk is lumped with, such studs as Mark Andrews of the Baltimore Ravens and Jack Doyle of the Indianapolis Colts and Nick Vannett of the Seattle Seahawks, guys you've never ever even heard of before, unless you're like an absolute psycho in fantasy and you're at the bottom of the barrel trying to scrape and put someone in there that might produce for a week. Two touchdowns this year? It's unheard of. I mean, those are just random tight ends, like I said, you've never heard of, who have two touchdowns. This, the same number as the guy who's likely going to retire as the greatest tight end of all time, the artist formerly known as Gronk, now just Robert James Gronkowski, another tight end. His game, and Bedard said it last this week, earlier in the week on in his appearance on Felger and Maz, it's the worst game that Gronk's ever played against the Minnesota Vikings. He wasn't that good even blocking. He's just looked like a shell of himself throughout the year. And the thing is, too, I thought it would get better after he essentially had a month off, and it hasn't. And even in his injury-shortened seasons, Rob Gronkowski had more touchdowns and yardage through less games than he does this year. Even in 2013, he plays seven games. That's the year he gets his knee blown up by T.J. Ward of the Cleveland Browns. Through seven games, four touchdowns, 592 yards. 2016, he plays eight games. This is where he ended up getting lit up by the Seahawks and was out the following
week. And then the next week against the Jets, he landed on his back, and then he was done.
Eight games, three touchdowns, 540 yards before he goes out for the year. And then this year, it's nine games, two touchdowns, 530 yards, and he's invisible in the red zone time and again and looking like a shell of himself. And at times, even if you look at the all-22 or whatever, he's still getting double covered in the red zone. And so this is maybe why he's not as productive as he's been in the past. But just the way he moves, that he can't get out of he just looks slow. He doesn't look like the same player. This is why I declared that Gronk, the unstoppable Gronk, maybe the best weapon in the NFL. I don't think he's coming back.
You know, I always thought Gronk was kind of be like the Earl Campbell of tight ends. You remember, Earl Campbell was just tremendous when he came in the league, but that physical style just did not lend itself to longevity. I think there's the same thing going on here with Rob Gronkowski, and obviously he came into the league with a back injury. But I'm not ready to completely write him off. I don't think he's ever going to be right this year, Jim. And we'll see what happens in the offseason. I mean, as he said in the past, football is not fun when you're hurt. So maybe this will be the tipping point for him, and he'll say, that's it, I'm done with this, I don't want to deal with these injuries, I don't want to deal with not being who I used to be in the league, and I don't want to deal with the Patriot way and Bill Belichick. Jeff Darlington had that report that the rigors of the Patriot way were wearing on Gronk. But I also think there's a part of him that's not going to want to go out like this, and I think even though he's diminished, I think this has a lot more to do with injury than just general decline. I think his injury is worse than what they've let on. We talked about on Felger and Maz, there's stuff
that's been around the team. They listed his ankle.
They listed his ankle.
But there's been rumors
that it's an Achilles. And that's the type of injury that would lend itself to not being able to go full bore, not being explosive, because you're worried about blowing that thing out. And I don't know, maybe it's something that can heal on its own, or maybe he's destined for a Richard Sherman thing and that's it. He's done for good. But I just look at it and I say, well, he was pretty good the first game of the year against Houston. So what happened after that? Like, after one game, he just fell off a cliff? I think it has more to do with the injuries. If your argument to me is this guy will never be healthy again, whatever injury he's dealing with now, if it is an Achilles, he's just going to blow it out and he won't come back. I get it. But if the argument is sort of, okay, this is Rob Gronkowski, and one day he just woke up and fell off a cliff because of age, because of usage, all that stuff. I don't know. I still think there's a chance he could get back at least to what he was last year.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it might be what you're saying in terms of the Earl Campbell effect, like that cumulative effect of too many hits. And he's had, what, 3 back surgeries? You know, I also think that this is the last year.
A lot of people feel that way. I think it could be. On the other hand, though, if Tom Brady comes to him and says, "I need you, big guy. I need you, big fella. Give me one more year. I know this guy is a pain in the ass. I get it. But one more year, we'll go through the off-season thing. We'll put everything into it. My guy, you know, Mr. Miyagi will fix you up. We'll go through it. Give me one more." How does Gronk say no to Brady? Doesn't Gronk seem like one of the most impressionable people on the planet?
Yeah.
Like, whatever the person who talked to him, like, told him, he's just going to do it.
Human golden retriever. I've said it before. Okay, Tom, I'll come back.
Yeah. I just sort of think.
I like how you slipped in the pain in the ass being Bill Belichick there, too.
Yeah. Well, you know. Frank, the rigors of the Patriot way.
Frank the Tank, what's up?
Hey, it's Lee Rocco. How you doing?
Hey, Frank.
First and foremost, tonight with the Bruins, if I don't see blood out on that ice, I am going to be so pissed. They're just really pissing me off this week. As far as the Pats go, I know he's hurt. You can tell he's hurt. He's definitely not, you know, he doesn't have his full sprint going. I still think as long as he can make it through the year, I still think he can help the team without a doubt. Maybe he's not going to get double covered or anything, but I still think he can help the team out a little bit, and I do think that they need him, because what do we honestly have at tight end? I mean, that's a big fat zero right there. I mean, you're going to put Devlin over there at tight end? I mean, I don't see anything happening with this team unless Gronkowski can stay a little bit healthy and try to make it through the season. As far as the team goes, going down to Miami, you know what they remind me of every time they go down to Miami? In Ace Ventura, when he's trying to get into that psychological hospital and he's just going mental with Courtney Cox in there. That's what the Patriots remind me of when they go down to Miami. It's all psychological. Like, they've got to just get over it, get over the weather, get over the fact that you've got a losing record down there, whatever. The team sucks. They should walk over these guys with a steamroll this week. And if they don't, I'm with you, Murray. It's a sign that the team's not really going to go anywhere.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Yeah, and it has more to do with how they've played on the road all year, too. I mean, they look like two completely different teams.
It's true.
And they were averaging over 30 points a game at home. And the offense, there's been, I think, the bigger problem on the road more than anything else.
Well,
again, it's been it's all been bad. The defense was bad in Tennessee.
We're getting lit up by Blake Bortles, Matt Stafford, and Marcus Mariota. I mean, you know, Stafford's not having a great year. That Titans offense is not the greatest. I think I looked up Mariota's stats the other day. He has like 11 touchdown passes and 7 picks.
Oh,
like the quarterbacks who have lit them up in those road games, it's disconcerting to me.
Andy and Dedham, you're next on Rob Gronkowski. Go ahead, Andy.
Hey, I just wanted to say I'm surprised that you guys launch into this thing about how he's now dead when the guy is, I think we should be commending him for putting his body on the line every Sunday. And the fact of the matter is, on any given Sunday, he could easily put up 2 touchdowns, over 100 yards, and make you guys eat your words. I'm glad that he's on the field trying as hard as he can, and hopefully, at some point, he gets mad, and he gets angry, and we see playoff Gronk. And a final point, you guys are mentioning the Jaguars game and the Lions game. The team was completely different back then. You didn't have Edelman. You didn't have Josh Gordon. You didn't have Sony Michelle kicking into the Gary's in now.
So what about the Titans game?
Okay, the Titans game was weird. I'll give you that one.
Okay. All right. And Andy, I will gladly eat my words on this. It's been this whole season. I've been waiting now. Like, okay, is he gonna catch a couple of touchdowns? Is he going to look like Gronk? We've had a pretty big sample size by now. That's why I'm saying that. And I'm not the only person that feels this way. We have people that actually, you know, have covered football for a living, like Greg Bedard and Paul Perillo of Patriots Football Weekly, who agreed with me this week. He looks like a shell of himself. We'll continue to take your calls on Gronk and the Patriots. And I want to get your thoughts, Chris, on Josh McDaniels, who's rumored to be leaving again. It's amazing how in the NFL your name can be trash one minute, and the next minute you're now the new hot coaching candidate again. So we'll get to that next here before we get into the Sports Hub Celtics show at noon here on Gaspar and Murray 98.5 of Sports Hub. Oh, before, let me guess, McCone, does nothing work over there? Let me guess, the computers aren't working? Yeah. Oh, what a shocker. It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Gasper and Murray, 98.5.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't really worry about the future, and honestly, each week is a tremendous challenge, and we try to stay in the moment and focus on the task at hand, which this week is obviously considerable, considering that we haven't had a lot of success down there to Miami. So there's a lot for us to look at, and a great defense for us to go down there and face, where they play extremely well at home. And all the other stuff is just, you know, it is what it is. Don't really pay too much attention to it. If that's in the cards for me, then that's great. I've said that before, but again, I'm not worried about that right now.
So that's current Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels speaking earlier this week in a conference call, being asked about him potentially taking a head coaching job maybe with the Green Bay Packers because they fire Mike McCarthy after that, the lowest of the low for that bad team this year, losing at home to the Arizona Cardinals. Yeesh. So now he's rumored to be the next head coach there to replace Mike McCarthy, who's fired. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. And I say current offensive coordinator because it's amazing to me that he is now being rumored again to be a head coach, either there or Cleveland or somewhere else. Because you would never have this in any other walk of life, Chris. If you got hired for a job, you get hired for a job, and you have all these other guys to come along with you as assistants. They uproot their lives and their families. And then at the last minute, you decide, nah, I'm good. I'm not going to take that job. I'm going to go back to where I was because I'm more comfortable there. Or I have to say this with my eyes rolling in the back of my head. The guy I've been working under, he's now going to show me his secrets.
He's going to open up the vault, Jim.
He's going to open up the vault. What a crock. He got more money to come back here. I still believe that he was told he's going to be the next head coach of the Patriots once Belichick retires. Something's changed here this season. Maybe Bill has now decided, you know what? No, I still want to get that last pelt, as you say. What's the one thing he has yet to accomplish? Win a Super Bowl without Tom Brady.
Yeah.
So maybe he's got a little bit more juice in the
tank.
Or
even if he wins it with a diminished Tom Brady, doesn't that sort of swing the argument back, you know, his way?
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we've seen, I'm sure we'll get to it later, but with Nathan Eovaldi, I mean, recency bias, the last thing you see. So if Brady, who's having, I think, you know, he's been good, not great this year. If he's good, but not great, and they win it, then don't you think that, you know, Bill will sort of get the higher medal platform in history, at least in the offseason?
And
so that'll benefit him.
As you know, I'm a Brady Bobo, and in the war between, if they're, you know, we'll call it a war between Brady and Belichick, you know, the palace queue behind the scenes, I'm Team Brady all the way. If they were to do that, this is Belichick's greatest coaching accomplishment. It's up there with 2011 and 2008.
Yeah, 2001, obviously.
But like I said, like in any other walk of life, this guy's name would be mud. It should be mud. Josh McDaniels should never get a head coaching job anywhere else. But because it's the NFL and, you know, it's the new hot name again, here he is being talked about as being the next head coach of the Packers. Like, do you think this ends up happening? Do you think there's any truth to this? Do you think he stays? What your thoughts on
first
all the
of all, stuff? I didn't realize that was Josh McDaniels. I've talked to Josh. I thought that was a random cliche generator that we were using when we came back from break. I would not be surprised if he took a coaching job, but I don't think that the Packers, I don't think that is the most attractive job. I think the most attractive job for Josh would be the Cleveland Browns.
I agree.
Ohio native, Baker Mayfield is there. I was looking this up last night for some research I was doing for a story. The Baltimore Ravens have been tremendous in pass defense this year. They're allowing under 200 yards passing per game. They've allowed one 300-yard passer this year, Baker Mayfield. So you go to Cleveland with Baker Mayfield, the quarterback's in place, but he hasn't been developed yet. You develop that guy into a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, who gets all the credit? You, Josh McDaniels, quarterback whisperer. Even though everybody right now knows Mayfield can play, but the way history will look at it, if you take him to the playoffs, you did it. You made him into an elite quarterback. You go to Green Bay, you don't win. It's the same as McCarthy. They're saying, well, you have one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. You can't win with this guy? What kind of coach are you? I mean, to me, I look at Green Bay, that's really a no-win situation. If he goes there and they're good and they win, people are going to say, well, it was Aaron Rodgers. He just got tired of McCarthy. You brought in a new coach. He needed a change, and he got back to being Aaron Rodgers. You don't win with him. They say you have one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. You couldn't get it done with him. You're just a lieutenant. This is obvious. You take Belichick away from these guys, they can't get anything accomplished. So to me, Cleveland's the job, not Green Bay for Josh.
I agree. I think he would get more leeway there because the demands would almost be immediate if he went to the Packers.
Yeah, you got to win.
Yeah.
The clock's ticking on Rodgers. Biological clock for him to win another championship is ticking, and you got to get it done. And everybody knows that guy can play. You're not going to get any credit for anything he does. You can only get the blame.
Yeah, and with Cleveland, too, there's a lot of young talent there. That Denzel Ward. Like, there's it's not just Mayfield. Like
Nick Chubb.
Defensively, there's a lot to build with that team. I would go there. But it's just, again, it's amazing to me that he even has the opportunity to get another head coaching job. After last year, his agent fired him, Chris. Like, that's
But he also was Ballard's agent.
Yeah, still. Just, you don't see that. And
you know, who knows? I mean, you know, maybe. I mean, here's the thing. He's not, I don't think he's toxic to other NFL teams, and I thought that he would be, you know, and I thought that he would do that and it would be good, but I also thought that you would look at it and teams would say, I don't want this guy, right? And now they're saying they want him. So I bet you in the agent community, it's probably an agent that wants him too, because they can make money off this guy. That just, to me, speaks to the dearth of coaches in the NFL, that McDaniels is right back at the top of the list after what he pulled with Indy.
The thing that would make, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, the thing that would make McDaniels attractive for me is that, okay, I know that he's worked with the best, and so I can take him seriously. I can pick his brain and maybe some of the stuff he worked with Tom Brady.
Like, yeah.
This is why I think the Packers would want to bring him in, because Aaron Rodgers, who needs to be coached right now, I think that's
plainly obvious. No, he's
it's not all about McCarthy.
No,
he's had a bad year.
He's turning into Favre after Holmgren left.
But I think he needs to be coached up, and he would listen to someone like Josh McDaniels, who's worked with another diva, if we're being honest. So this is why I think it would be crazy for them to bring in like Lincoln Riley or any of these college coaches, because if I'm Aaron Rodgers, like, who are you? Like, you've worked with college kids. What the hell am I
But the thing is, if Josh gets there, and there are a lot of things that Josh does really, really well offensively in his system and all that, Jim, but is he going to change the system? Like, to me, Aaron Rodgers is like Brady and Manning. Like, the offense is what Aaron Rodgers wants it to be. It's his offense. That's the scheme. And everybody else adjusts. So is Josh going to come in and bring the Patriots offense? You're going to teach, you know, how old is Rodgers now?
34, 35.
34, 35-year-old Aaron Rodgers, who's been basically a West Coast offense his entire career, is now going to adopt the Patriots offense? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's a good point. Dana in Warwick, Rhode Island, quickly on Rob Gronkowski. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up?
Hey, so first of all, Murray, you're one of the best things that ever happened in 98.5, man. You're snarky, and you get all the great pop references and stuff. You're a sports radio god in my book.
Oh, thanks.
And you two together as a team, you guys are great. Gasper and Murray, great show. So anyway, my thing is, Christian Fourier wrote an article online a couple days ago questioning the TB12 method for Gronk and its effectiveness, and maybe he has a point. It might work for a quarterback position, but not for somebody that needs to have explosion and strength the way that Gronk does. So maybe Tom says, you know what, Rob, come back, but don't do TB12. Maybe it doesn't work for you. Go back to the other way, and we'll win another one. What do you guys think?
Well, I definitely think that the strength isn't there. Thanks for the call and the compliments, Dana. I'll Venmo you the money for that that phone call that I told you to make and plug
us. If you can get the internet here to work, good luck with that.
I think that his strength has been affected. And look, there has to be some sort of correlation there. Well, he can make a catch. Remember the game in Pittsburgh last year?
Great shoestring catch.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, you see the pliability at work there. Yeah. Okay, so what he gains in the ability to make a catch like that, he loses in a game like last week in Minnesota where he's getting stood up one-on-one and he can't pick up the other yard, an extra yard, to get the first down and the play that ultimately leads to the stupid direct snap to James White on that third down, and they stop that drive. Like, you see, he's not the same guy.
Yeah, but here's my thing on this. Where was this last year? Where was this last year when he had 69 catches for 1,084 yards and 8 touchdowns, despite missing 2 games, one of them for suspension? So it worked for him last year. This is a guy with a history of back injuries. I think you can make the opposite case that TB12 is the only thing that's keeping this guy on the field. As is now, look, if you want to make the case that from a blocking standpoint, it's hurt his game, I think that's fair. And I think that was something the Patriots felt and Belichick felt last year. And I think that was sort of the genesis of the whole cold war between Brady and Belichick. What happened to my tight end who used to be able to block? But in terms of the passing game this year, I don't think that opinion makes any sense. I mean, if you're going to make that correlation, then what about last year when he was productive as a pass catcher and he was on it? What happened then? I think the bottom line is he's injured. That's the reality of it. I don't think it has anything to do with TB12. TB12 helped him last year and helped your team. This year, the guy's banged up. Is he hurt because of TB12?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's just either the cumulative effect of the injuries or there's something going on there more than the back and the ankle. We'll put the Patriots and Gronk conversation on hold for a moment because we have to get to the Sports Hub Celtics show. We were vamping there for a couple of minutes because I wanted to give Tim McCone some time here. McCone, have you got the computer to work on?
No,
there?
Absolutely not. No.
So how are you going to do it?
We're
going to
go off the phone too. Yeah, exactly.
This is what I had to do yesterday. Yes. Yeah. No. Try not to freak out like an uncaged animal like I did yesterday because the equipment doesn't work. You see, as it turns out, when you work in radio, and no offense to our engineers here who work very hard, and I hope they don't get offended because this isn't a personal shot at them.
Your email's totally getting hacked.
It's no matter where I work, at any, the stuff should just always work because the computers, the microphones, it's all very important when it comes to broadcasting, and somehow. It all just somehow keeps getting screwed up. I don't know who's to blame here. It's not the engineers. Maybe it's the other coworkers. But, man, there's ghosts in the machine here in this building, and it's enough to make one crazy. So good luck with this, McCone.
Yeah, freestyle headlines,
McCone. He's
going
to do the freestyle headlines
that.
Off the McCone phone.
I almost swore we'll there.
Get to the Sports Hub Celtics show coming up next here, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.